This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This is Case Closed. Thanks for joining me again this Wednesday. We'll hear first this week from A Case for Dr. Morell. We'll hear their episode from May 14th, 1957, titled The Sleepwalker. After that, it's Calling All Cars and the Baby Dillinger Gang, their story from November 26th, 1936.
I hate her. I hate her. Now.
Richard.
Huh? What?
What are you doing?
Where am I? I was dreaming. Walking in my sleep.
Richard.
A horrible dream.
Close your mother's door. We don't want to wake her.
Thank heavens you woke me.
I heard someone moving. I thought your mother might be ill.
It was a horrible dream. Horrible.
Go back to bed.
Yes, Helen. Of course.
Richard!
What is it?
In your hand. A knife. You're holding a knife.
BBC presents A Case for Dr. Morell, another adventure by Ernest Dudley, with Cecil Parker as the famous Dr. Morell and Sheila Sim as his secretary, Miss Frail. The Sleepwalker.
Oh, who can that be at this time of night?
One good way to find out, Miss Frail, would be to answer it.
Oh, hello? This is Dr. Morell's house. Hello? Hello? Well, who is it? Well, there's no one there.
Well, in that case, hang up, and we'll proceed with my work.
Oh, I do wish people wouldn't do that. It makes me feel quite creepy.
Probably a burglar casing the joint.
Doing what, Doctor?
Surely you've heard that underworld expression before. The burglar telephones the house he's selected to discover if it's unoccupied or not. Quite the usual procedure.
Oh, but I'm sure no burglar would dream of robbing you. They know you too well.
I'm not quite sure whether to feel flattered or not.
Oh, well, you know what I mean. Anyway, I believe you're only trying to scare me.
If I may continue with my dictating.
Yes, Dr. Morell. Where were we?
Well, I was propounding that every criminal is actuated by a compulsive urge to encompass his own doom. In each human being, the seeds of death are implanted from the moment of birth. And in order to destroy himself, the evildoer deliberately seeks to draw attention to his crime.
I know, I still don't see that.
No, Miss Frey, possibly because your comprehension of the psychology of the criminal is not so profound as mine.
Oh, of course, you know it all.
You are saying...
Nothing, Doctor, nothing.
It is only by this understanding of the criminal psychology and knowledge of the principles that govern psychiatric behavior that the police investigator can hope to operate with any success. Now, take, for instance, that case of sleepwalking, which I made comparatively short work of.
Oh, that odd young man, Richard Wilson, you mean?
Yes, a classic example of what I have in mind, the culprit's self-betrayal.
It was one morning early this year, I remember, when he came to see you by appointment. This is Mr. Wilson, Dr. Morell.
Good morning.
Good morning, Doctor.
Thank you, Miss Frail. Sit down, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you. It's very good of you to see me so quickly.
You have my assistant, Miss Frail, to thank.
It was her I spoke to yesterday on the phone and made the appointment.
A somewhat impressionable young woman, inclined to be influenced by an appeal to the emotions.
Well, I did make it sound rather urgent.
A matter of life and death was Miss Frail's description.
You see,
it was upon her insistence that it was a case of such urgency that I agreed to see you.
I'm very grateful to Miss Frail, and if I did sound so worked up, well, it could be a matter of life and death.
For whom, Mr. Wilson? For you?
No, Dr. Morell. It's my mother. I'm afraid that I'm going to murder her.
Do you care to smoke?
Yes, thank you. Thanks.
Try to relax, Mr. Wilson. And let me reassure you that it isn't altogether unusual for children to wish their parents dead. And sometimes to the extent that they become horrified that they may transform the thought into action.
I'm not a child, Dr. Morell.
Quite. But there are few adults who are not inhibited by some hangover of childhood influences. I myself, for instance, have never been able to rid myself of the infantile compulsion to slide my finger along the banister when ascending or descending a staircase.
Oh, really?
Merely a manifestation by my subconscious of some childhood yearning, real or imaginary, for security.
Well, I'm sure my childhood was secure enough.
By the way, Mr. Wilson, I would prefer it if you didn't mention this little eccentricity of mine to Miss Frayle.
No, of course I won't.
It might appeal to her as a matter for some levity.
I understand. Well, I had a happy home, a fine school and university. I'm doing well now. I'm an architect by profession.
And your age?
33.
Married?
No.
Is your father alive?
No, he died when I was a child.
And you live with your mother?
Yes, I designed our house, as a matter of fact, in Hampstead, overlooking the heath. Mother and I have always got along famously, and well, since I hadn't married, there was no reason for me to have a place of my own.
And you now find yourself suffering from an obsessive fear that you will kill your mother.
For the past 3 months, I've been having these ghastly nightmares.
They've always been the same sort of dream?
Yes, that I've got to kill her, murder her. Then last night, I had this dreadful dream again, and I woke up outside her bedroom. I'd walked in my sleep. I was holding a knife, a stiletto that I use as a paper knife. If I hadn't been awoken, I'm sure I should have gone in and stabbed her.
Murder your mother whilst walking in your sleep. An interesting possibility. Though I'm bound to say I've never encountered such a case in all my experience.
I shall do it. I know it. You must help me.
But you've always awakened from your dream in time.
Except last night I didn't. Someone else woke me. I was just going to enter Mother's room, holding the knife, and then Helen, Miss Keane, Mother's secretary companion, she heard me.
She woke you?
Yes, thank heaven she did. Otherwise I should...
Well, I'm quite sure that you would have woken up yourself, as you've done before.
But supposing I hadn't, Doctor, supposing I had stabbed her, I'd have been guilty of murder.
Well, as to that, no court of law would find you guilty of a crime when you were not responsible for your actions.
But, of course, I didn't come to you just to know that. Look, I'm terrified, I tell you, that I shall kill my own mother.
You would describe yourself as close to each other?
Oh, yes, that's why I simply can't understand these nightmares. And now, last night...
It's possible that you may have sleepwalked on previous occasions... And return to your own bedroom without you or anyone else being any the wiser.
I see. I hadn't thought of that.
Mm-hmm. Have you contemplated becoming married?
No. Well, that is, I am in love with someone.
And who is in love with you?
I think so. Yes. Yes, she is.
And have you asked her to marry you?
Not yet.
Do you wish to marry her?
Yes.
And she wants to marry you?
Yes.
Then...
Well, you see, it's... That is, my mother. Look, what's all this got to do with it? Helen understands.
Helen... Your mother's secretary companion?
Yes.
How long have you been in love with each other?
Well, I suppose it began a year ago, a few months after Helen came, although I didn't realize it at the time.
When did you realize it?
About 4 months ago, she told me she loved me too.
And she understood that you couldn't have married her while your mother was alive.
Well, how did you...
You explained that she was a very understanding young woman.
Look, I came to consult you about these horrible dreams. What's Helen got to do with it?
Everything. You want to marry. You can't because you know it will upset your mother. In effect... Your mother stands between you and your personal happiness. Subconsciously, you are aware of this, and though you try to repress this nagging truth, it confronts you in your dreams and nightmares in which you can remove the obstacle to your happiness.
Well, I can't believe it. It doesn't make sense.
On the contrary, Mr. Wilson, yours is the most typical case.
You mean to say that all I've told you has been brought about by Helen and I falling in love?
And because you can't marry for fear of your mother.
But surely you can help me. I mean, I thought you would.
Make out a prescription... Send you away with a bottle of pills? Well, it isn't as simple as that.
I don't think... Well, that is... Perhaps I'd better go. I'm very grateful, Dr. Morell, of course, but...
Ah, Miss Frayle.
Yes, Doctor?
Mr. Wilson is just going.
Oh.
Thank you very much, Doctor.
At any rate, you've been able to satisfy yourself on one point.
What's that?
Well, if you should walk in your sleep and kill your mother, you won't be held guilty of murder. Not that, of course, that would happen. Anyway, not in your sleep.
Yeah, the morning hasn't started before that thing goes. Hello, this is Dr. Morell's house.
I must speak to him. I must...
Who is that, please?
It's Richard Wilson. I must speak to Dr. Morell. It's dreadfully urgent.
Oh, will you hold on, Mr. Wilson? Dr. Morell, it's Mr. Wilson on the phone. You remember he came to see you about a week ago.
Wilson? The sleepwalker with obsessive matricide tendencies?
Yes, Dr. Morell.
I'll speak to him. Mr. Wilson? Dr. Morell here.
Something frightful's happened. Please come at once, Doctor. My mother's dead. She's been murdered.
Very lovely house.
A wonderful early morning view across Hampstead Heath. Remarkably fine.
You can see St. Paul's glinting in the sunlight.
And glimpse the figure of justice above the Old Bailey.
Someone's coming. Dr. Morell?
Yes?
Please come in.
Oh, this is Miss Frayle.
I am Helen Keane, Mrs. Wilson's secretary companion. Mr. Wilson is upstairs in his room. I'm afraid you'll find him most dreadfully upset.
Oh, how awful for him. And for you, too.
Have the police been informed?
No. He wanted to see you first. If you'll come upstairs. This way.
Dr. Morell?
There he is. He heard you arrive.
Come up, please.
Go on, Dr. Morell and Miss Frayle. I'll wait down here.
I telephoned you right away, Doctor. This is dreadful. Shock.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Wilson.
Miss Keane says that you haven't called the police.
I didn't know what to do. Then I thought perhaps I ought to let you know first. Mother's room's along here.
What about the servants?
The housekeeper doesn't come till 10. There's a daily help who turns up when she feels like it. This is Mother's room.
Oh, what a state it's in.
This is how it was when I found her. I haven't touched anything.
Stabbed through the heart. I'm afraid there's nothing can be done.
Oh, poor thing.
I should think death must have occurred several hours ago.
That's the stiletto I told you about.
So I observe. Are you all right, Miss Frayle?
Yes, of course.
If you feel a trifle faint...
Yes, I know. Just put my head between my knees.
I came in as usual at 8:30 with her morning cup of tea, and there she was. Then I saw her dressing table had been ransacked and the window onto the balcony had been forced.
Well, her handbag's open, too.
Yeah, she always kept it there by her bedside. She had a note case, but that's gone.
The motive appears obvious enough.
She kept her jewelry in that case that's been thrown on the floor. The burglar must have disturbed her.
The bedclothes indicate a struggle. The stiletto, you had it in your possession that night?
Yes.
What did you do with it subsequently?
I was scared to keep it myself. I thought the best thing was to lock it away in Mother's bureau over there.
Well, it's been smashed open.
And the burglar found it.
Only Mother had the key.
Dr. Morell?
What is it, Miss Frayle?
In her right hand, look.
I had already noted. It appears to be a portion of a man's necktie.
The murderer.
She struggled with him, grabbed at his tie, and tore part of it.
Yes, a very ordinary tie of a pattern worn by thousands.
But still, it's something to go on.
Well, it's not unlike one of my own. Doctor, could I have done it? That's why I sent for you. Help me, you must help me. They'll hang me for it. Something I never meant to do.
Try to calm yourself.
I must have come in walking in my sleep, broken open the bureau where I knew the dagger was.
But what about the jewelry?
I'd probably taken that and hidden it away somewhere.
Aren't you forgetting one thing? You were wearing pajamas. Or do you seriously suggest that you put on a necktie, a portion of which your mother is gripping in her hand?
Well, of course, Mr. Wilson, that's proof that you couldn't have done it. You just listen to Dr. Morell. He's always right.
Thank you, Miss Frayle. Now, if you would listen to me...
Yes, Doctor.
Go downstairs and telephone the police.
Oh, but there's a phone here. Oh, of course. Fingerprints.
You are improving, Miss Frayle.
Oh, am I? Well, I'll go and phone Scotland Yard.
Dr. Morell?
Yes?
Will you tell them about my sleepwalking? I mean, despite what you say, I'm afraid they will suspect me.
Since you still seem so concerned, I think we may omit any reference to your somnambulism.
Oh, thank you.
I'll go and first.
It's all right, Miss Frayle. I'll go.
Oh.
Wouldn't it seem better coming from me?
Perhaps it would be better for you to phone them.
I'll do that.
You got him to ring the police deliberately, didn't you? You've got that look on your face.
You are very discerning, Miss Frayle. And what does that look signify?
Something you want to discuss with me confidentially.
Of course.
Do you think he's trying to pretend he did it in his sleep? That's what it looks like to me.
Well, I hate to disappoint you, but it doesn't look like that to me.
It doesn't?
You see, closer examination of the necktie indicates that Mrs. Wilson didn't tear it off in a struggle with an assailant.
Doesn't it?
Now, look for yourself.
Oh, I'll take your word for it.
Don't be so squeamish. Look. Notice how she grips it, the inside of the tie held against the palm of her hand.
Yes.
Doesn't that suggest anything to you?
No.
There are moments, Miss Frayle, when I could willingly... However, perhaps a simple demonstration will make my meaning clear. Sit down.
Yes, Doctor.
Now, I am leaning over you as if...
Oh, yes,
As
Doctor.
If about to attack you.
Oh!
Now, grip my tie with your right hand.
Like this?
Your right hand.
Oh, yes, you've made me quite flustered.
Grip my tie.
Like this?
Well, do it as if you mean it, as if you know I'm about to murder you, which is a matter of fact.
Oh, what, Doctor?
Never mind, never mind.
Is this right?
You don't... you don't really have to strangle me.
Oh, sorry.
Now, do you see how you're holding my tie?
With the outside of it against the palm of my hand.
Precisely.
Oh, what is it, Dr. Moreau? What are you getting at?
Well, if my theory is correct, the logical conclusion is that the torn-off tie was planted to give a false impression.
Gracious. You mean that it wasn't a burglar who murdered her, but someone else? But you just said it wasn't Mr. Wilson. Well, who else then?
That remains to be seen.
What is it?
I thought I heard someone.
Wait. Oh, Doctor.
Oh,
I was just making some coffee, and I was wondering whether you'd care for some.
Most kind.
Thank you. I'd love some.
Will you come down, then?
The police are on their way, Doctor. Hello, Helen.
Very good.
The police?
I just phoned them. Dr. Morell thought I should.
I'm sure he's right.
Of course.
And you still don't think I have to tell them about walking in my sleep?
But, Doctor, you...
Yes, Miss Frayne?
Oh, that'll be the police.
Oh, they've been very quick.
I'll answer it.
What were you going to say, Miss Frayne?
Oh, it was nothing.
I'm glad of that.
Well, give it to me. I'll see if I can get it. Richard. Richard.
Hmm?
Dr. Morell. Look at this.
Mother's note case. The one from her handbag.
That was the postman. He says he found it in the postbox when he was clearing it just now.
There's a pillarbox a few yards away from the house.
I recall passing it on our way here.
Look, let me look.
There's nothing in it.
He took all the money and pushed this into the pillarbox as he passed.
That would appear evident.
So it was a burglar, all right, just as we thought.
But, Doctor, you thought that...
Yes, Miss Frayne?
Oh, nothing. Your mother's name and address was in it, so the postman brought it back right away.
Good, it may be useful to the police.
But what about fingerprints, Dr. Morell? Oh, but I expect they will be all blurred.
I expect you're right.
Here we are, Doctor. Have some coffee before the police really do arrive. Coffee, Miss Ray?
Oh, thank you.
Oh, that must be them this time.
I'll go.
No, you finish your coffee, Helen. It looks as if I've been seeing a lot of the police. I might as well start now.
What's the time? 6 o'clock. Hmm. Where is Miss Frayle? I must dictate these notes. This could prove of inestimable value.
Dr. Morell?
Ah, Miss Frayle.
It's Scotland Yard. Inspector Hood is waiting in the study.
Eager, no doubt, to reveal that with which I am already
familiar. I didn't realize that you would...
Come, we mustn't keep our human bloodhound waiting.
Thought I'd just drop in, Dr. Morell, on my way back to the yard.
I'm very glad you did, Inspector. And now, as I'm sure you've noticed, Miss Frayle is all agog to learn the object of your visit.
I think I've got some news for you. But first of all, I do want to thank you for your help this morning. That tip-off about the tie, for instance. Well, I don't mind admitting, I might not have spotted that.
Well, I'm sure you would, Inspector. In any case, it was by no means conclusive, as I advised you at the time.
Quite so.
It merely seemed to indicate that Mrs. Wilson hadn't torn it from an assailant, as it appeared, but it had been planted to give that impression.
I demonstrated with Dr. Morell that she would most certainly have gripped the tie differently.
Have you arrived at the truth?
Have you made an arrest?
Hardly, Miss Frayle.
Oh, but surely, I mean, if you knew who committed the crime as well as Dr. Morell...
Dr. Morell? I didn't realize you'd come to a doctor.
But naturally, he realized who it was right from the start.
Well, I'll be...
Well, didn't you, Doctor?
As usual, Miss Frayle has given rein to her imagination, Inspector. I hadn't reached any conclusion this morning. Otherwise, I should, of course, have acquainted you accordingly.
I'm sure you would have.
Do say who it is.
All right, Miss Frayle, I'll get down to Casey's. If the doctor doesn't mind listening to what he already knows...
The truth can never be too often repeated.
Well, it was the tie, really. Once we realized it was a plant, all we had to do was to know who'd planted it. Then we'd be home and dry.
Oh, who did plant
now,
it?
Just coming to that.
You must try to curb your impatience, Miss Frayle.
We scouted round the house and the garden. There were footprints and evidence of a ladder having been placed against the garden wall on the inside to look as if the burglar had got into the garden that way. It was all very cunning. The only mistake was they didn't go far enough. There were no signs of the ladder against the outside wall.
Oh, goodness.
Goodness had nothing to do with this, Miss Frayle. Of course, it was an inside job. That disorder in the bedroom, all very realistically done.
But the note case in the pillarbox.
Ah, that was a master touch.
I was wondering when you were coming to that.
Yes, just the sort of thing a burglar would do. Grab the money, get rid of the note case in a pillarbox he was passing.
Then who was it who thought up all this?
I talked with young Wilson, but he didn't give much away. Understandably, he seemed knocked over by the shock. It was the secretary companion, Miss Keene, who proved most helpful.
Who's in love with Mr. Wilson.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Never mentioned it to me, either of them.
Did you ask them?
I didn't, as a matter of fact. Hardly seem to be the types to fall in love with each other. He's obviously wrapped up in his mother, and she's the practical, capable type. Absolute opposites.
Ah, Inspector, that's where you're not such a good detective.
Eh?
Not when it comes to investigating the human heart. It's just those types who are completely different who fall in love.
You think so?
Mm-hmm. The nervous young man and the girl, all poised and self-assured. The tall woman and the short man, and vice versa. The vague, silly little feather brain and the suave, sardonic man of the world. Don't you agree, Dr. Morell?
I can only say that I stand amazed at this revelation of your powers of perception.
Yes, I was afraid that was all you would say.
Anyway, whether they were in love or not, it's got no bearing on the case.
No, Inspector?
Not as it's turned out. Miss Keene was very frank, and as a result of what she said, the motive was obvious.
Proceed, Inspector.
Oh, this is absolutely enthralling.
Well, as you know, Mrs. Wilson had been left plenty by her husband when he died. The money was invested in South America. I won't go into the details. She was devoted to her son, and he to her, giving him all he wanted. Education, travel, training to be an architect, all the trimmings. Then, suddenly, a few weeks ago, it happened. All her money went up the spout. She awoke one morning to find herself comparatively flat broke.
Oh, poor woman.
She didn't tell her son. It was he she was most concerned about. He'd only just got going as an architect, and without her financial backing, he was finished before he'd begun. So she decided there was only one thing left for her to do. Alive, she wasn't worth a penny. But she carried life policies to the tune of £20,000.
You mean...
That's it, Miss Frail. She was worth more to her son, dead.
Oh, how dreadful. Isn't it, Dr. Morell?
Hey, Doctor?
Quite dreadful.
Of course, he would collect the lot. But, and this was vital, her policies carried a suicide clause. If Mrs. Wilson committed suicide... They wouldn't pay up a cent.
A not unusual stipulation in a life insurance,
quite.
Oh, so she deliberately took her own life, but make it look as though she'd been murdered.
That way her son would collect.
Oh, I can't help admiring her.
Inspector, you communicated your conclusions to the son?
Yes, I broke it to him gently. He didn't take it too well.
And Miss Keene, she was also informed?
She seemed more prepared for it, but then she knew of Mrs. Wilson's financial state.
Oh, that poor, desperate woman plotting and scheming like that to kill herself, and all for nothing.
I should be moved to feel as you do, if what the inspector just described to us happened to be true.
What?
Dr. Morell!
What do you mean, Doctor?
I mean that Mrs. Wilson did not commit suicide. She was murdered.
Here we are, Dr. Morell.
The house looks very dark.
There's a light in the front room.
Where Mrs. Wilson used to like to sit.
Come on. You wait here, driver.
Yes, sir.
There'll be a wireless car along any minute. Information room will have told them the drill.
Yes, sir.
Just tell them we've gone in, and I want them to wait outside the front door and keep their eyes peeled.
Very good, sir.
Let's hope the gate isn't locked.
No, it's all right.
Come on. Now, where's the bell push? It's so dark. Ah.
It's quite chilly.
Would you rather go back and wait in the car?
Oh, no.
Now, I'm going to leave this for you to handle, Dr. Morell.
I'll endeavor to be a credit to you.
To think that if it hadn't been for you... I still can't get over it. The dead cunning of it.
Inspector Hood, what brings you back again? Oh, hello, Dr. Morell. Miss Frail.
Good evening.
Sorry to disturb you like this.
I should have thought you'd seen enough of this house for one day.
Not quite, Mr. Wilson, I'm afraid.
Well, come on in.
Thank you.
What is there about all this to interest you, Dr. Morell? Inspector Hood has told you, of course.
I have heard his version of the matter.
Well, let's go into the front room. Helen's just gone upstairs. So the inspector's version doesn't add up with yours. Is that why you're here?
Well, I thought we might have a quiet talk, Mr. Wilson.
What have you found out? Something more about poor mother?
When you realized her motive for taking her own life, what was your reaction?
Well, frankly, I couldn't believe it. I still find it difficult to accept the idea. We've been discussing it, Helen and I. It just doesn't seem like mother. Helen's told me how she made her swear not to tell me about losing her money. I'm afraid she realized that she was very wrong not to have told me, in spite of her promise. Why, it would have made it easier for us to marry. Mother might have been less difficult about it.
I didn't know that you and Miss Keene were...
Oh, well, I didn't mean to mention it, and you didn't ask me.
You didn't ask me either, Inspector.
Helen.
Miss Keene.
Good evening, Dr. Morell. Miss Frail.
Good evening.
Good evening, Miss Keene.
I heard people arriving, so I came down. I didn't guess it was you.
I've been telling Dr. Morell what you and I have been discussing.
You mean my promise to your mother?
I was just saying how it might have made it easier for you and I to get married.
Yes, I heard you. But Dr. Morell, surely you and Inspector Hood, not to mention Miss Frail, aren't here merely to inquire what Richard's reactions were when he knew that his mother committed suicide for his sake.
Not altogether, Miss Keene.
It would hardly require the three of you just for that, plus the support of another police car which has just arrived.
Oh.
Helen.
I noticed it on my way downstairs.
You don't miss much, Miss Keene.
Well, what is all this? Have you got police outside?
It concerns the note case in the pillar box. Hmm? You will recall, Mr. Wilson, that the postman returned it just after 10 o'clock this morning, after he'd cleared the box. For your information, the first collection is at 8:30 a.m.
Well, what of it?
The supposed burglar, who at first was presumed to have murdered your mother, apparently then threw the note case in the pillar box after leaving the house in the early hours.
But we know now that there wasn't a burglar. Mother tried to make it look like that.
There wasn't any burglar. Perfectly correct. But, Mr. Wilson, nor could it have been your mother who slipped the note case in the pillar box.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, if she had, it must have been found at the time of the first collection at 8:30 a.m.
Why, yes.
She couldn't have placed it there after that, since by then she'd been dead for several hours.
But of course, that must be right.
Dead right, Mr. Wilson.
Well, then who did put it there?
The person whose fingerprints have been found on the note case.
But...
And who was also listening outside your mother's room just before 10 o'clock this morning and overheard me inform Miss Frail that the torn-off necktie was a plant, and who then hurried out to the pillar box in a last desperate effort to divert suspicion. The same person, Mr. Wilson, who, learning of your mother's financial crash, saw no future in marrying you unless you inherited the £20,000 insurance.
Helen!
You won't get me!
Helen! Helen, come back!
It's all right. She won't get very far. You can see from the window.
Helen! Helen! It was her all the time.
Now, they've caught her. She's putting up a struggle, but they've got her all right.
Oh, it's too horrible.
I was watching her face, Dr. Morell, while you were talking. She went absolutely white. I thought she was going to faint.
It's usually Miss Frail who is so overcome.
Miss Frail! Miss Frail! She's passed out.
I thought the excitement might prove too much for her.
No doubt about it, Dr. Morell. The way you solved the sleepwalker case was out of this world.
You are too kind, Miss Frail. I have encountered few criminals who went to such elaborate pains to cover up their tracks. Disposing of the note case in the pillar box, for instance, for all her ingenuity, she found herself driven by a subconscious compulsion to overplay her hand and so encompass her self-destruction.
But surely she betrayed herself by her fingerprints on the note case. I call that just plain stupid.
My dear Miss Frail, did I never explain that to you?
How do you mean?
Well, naturally, her fingerprints were on the note case. She put them there when she took it from the postman, so they proved absolutely nothing at all.
What?
Bluff, my dear Miss Frail.
Bluff?
Just bluff, yes. It had been a long day, remember. I wanted to force a confession out of her without wasting any time, so that I could get back and proceed with my work in the laboratory, which was much more important in my estimation.
But, Dr. Morell...
That reminds me, Miss Frail, if I may continue with dictating these notes.
Yes, Doctor. Where were we?
Well, I was observing that every criminal is motivated by an inner compulsion to bring about his self-destruction. In order to achieve this act of self-betrayal, the evildoer cannot resist from drawing attention to his own crime.
That was another adventure in a BBC series featuring Ernest Dudley's famous character, Dr. Morell, and, of course, his secretary, Miss Frail. The artists taking part were Dr. Morell, Cecil Parker, Miss Frail, Sheila Sim, Helen Keane, Moira Lister, Richard Wilson, Hugh Burton, Inspector Hood, Philip Ray. This recorded program was produced by Leslie Bridgemont. Ha ha ha.
listening next Saturday afternoon for another case for Dr. Morell, this time The Blackmailer.
Created by the Rio Grande Oil Company.
Los Angeles Police calling all cars. Attention all cars. Broadcast 157. Be on the lookout for a car bearing two boys. Number one, blonde, heavy set, has a pug nose. Number two, swarthy complexion, lighter build. These boys are armed and thought to be holding up gas stations. That's all. Rosenquist.
Often explained to you that Rio Grande cracked gasoline is superior to ordinary gasoline because it is cracked. To make the point still clearer, let us consider another familiar fuel, which is improved by cracking, coal. Coal, in large lumps, is slow to start burning. Once it begins to burn, it gives plenty of heat, but it burns inefficiently, wastefully. So coal is broken up into small pieces, cracked. Then it starts to burn easily, develops quick, efficient, even heat. This illustrates clearly the difference between cracked and uncracked gasoline. Uncracked gasoline is lumpy gasoline, hard to start, sluggish and wasteful, incapable of perfect combustion. Some of it even flows raw down the cylinder walls. Some is forced, unburned, out the exhaust. Rio Grande cracked gasoline is broken up into tiny atoms by the patented Sinclair cracking process. It starts instantly, burns evenly, and develops tremendous power. Every possible atom is turned into driving energy. Rio Grande cracked gasoline with tetraethyl is used in more police cars, fire engines, ambulances, and other emergency equipment wherever it is sold than any other brand. It has been specified as the preferred gasoline for the police departments of Los Angeles, Oakland, Berkeley, Fresno, Santa Barbara, San Diego, Maricopa County, Arizona, and many, many other cities and counties. Exactly the same Rio Grande cracked gasoline featured by your independent Rio Grande dealer. Remember, this is the only gasoline that will give you police car performance in your own car. Try a tankful tomorrow. And now we present Chief James E. Davis of the Los Angeles Police Department. Chief Davis.
Good evening, friends. When you read a story about a kidnapper, you usually think of a hardened man as the perpetrator. But if you could look through the files in our record bureau and see the number of kidnappings, robberies, and murders that are committed by boys still in teens, it would undoubtedly give you quite a shock. Yet it is a fact that the majority of cases, like the one you will hear tonight, are done by juveniles, boys who have turned to a crime career rather than face the responsibilities of an honest one. It is a terrible thing to have to sentence a boy, hardly started in life, to a long-time penitentiary term. But there is no other way out. If we let them off easily, give them another chance, the result would be obvious. They would think they could get away with the same thing again and return to their original career of crime. Our only chance to help these embryonic criminals is to show them in the beginning that crime does not pay.
It is early morning, September 29th, 1936. On the wide cement highway leading out of Olympia, Washington, two boys stand, thumbs pointed south in the familiar gesture of the hitchhiker, and watch the steady line of cars as they speed by.
So far, so bad. These guys don't seem to even notice it.
Don't worry. Sooner or later, someone will stop. They're bound to.
Sure, I know it. Only I still say, so far, so bad.
Yeah.
Hey, watch it, Hank. Here comes a car with only one guy in it. See if you can look pretty for him.
Nuts.
You didn't look so good, I guess.
Did you ever stop to think that maybe it was you that didn't look so good? That face of yours would scare anything away.
Yeah. I notice it ain't scared you away yet.
Hold it. Here comes another jalopy.
Keep waving that thumb.
I am.
Hey, stop it.
And there's only one guy in it. Come on.
Hey, want a lift, boys?
Yeah, we sure do.
Well, pile in.
Thanks. Come on, Hank.
I'm coming.
Hey, where are you boys headed for?
Oh, we're going for a long run.
Yeah.
And you're going to take us all the way. Huh? Keep your gun on him, Hank. I'll take the wheel. Hey,
but look here, you can't do this.
Shut up and move over, mister, and don't try nothing funny neither.
You'll be arrested, you know, by the
quiet. First... Or would you rather take a dose of lead poison?
All right, all right.
Better now move over here and let me get behind that wheel.
Yes, of course.
Come on, you clumsy lug. Okay. Now, we're taking a swell tour of the country, mister, and so long as you keep that mouth buttoned, you won't get hurt. I don't think. But open it and you'll be sorry. Watch him, Hank, we're off.
Fear, clutching at his throat with cold fingers, the kindly motorist huddles in the front seat of his own car while the youthful hitchhikers send it speeding south toward California. For seemingly endless hours, they ride this way. And then, after some 400 miles, the driver pulls the car off the road into a little side street and stops the motor.
Hey, what are you going to do here?
Get rid of you, Pop. This is the end of the line.
Hey, yeah, but where are we? What am I going to do way out here?
Tell him, Hank.
Sure, it's a pleasure. You're somewhere near Grants Pass, Oregon. After we get through tying you to that tree over there, it really don't matter much what you do. The main thing is we know you won't get to a telephone for some time.
Very well done, Hank. Now, come on, mister, and make it fast.
Say, you know, this is an awful thing to do to a person, boys. I might die out here, and nobody'd be the wiser for it. Now, think of having that on your soul for the rest of your life.
Save it, Pop. You won't die. And if you do, so what? Give me that rope, Hank.
Here you are.
Yeah, now, sit down here by this tree.
Yeah, but you heard him. Sit down.
Here you are, Hank. Take this end of the rope and fasten it there.
Don't do that, boys.
Tie it tight. Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, that's it. That's the idea. Now,
don't.
Now, Hank, pass it around to me.
There. Please don't.
So, there we are. All fixed. Just as cozy as can be. Now, mister, we're leaving. If you get too cold during the night, ring for the butler. I'm sure he'll be glad to get you anything you might want. Come on, Hank, let's blow.
October 3rd, 5 nights later in an oil station on Florence Avenue in Los Angeles.
Evening, gents. Little gas?
Yeah. But check the oil first, will you?
Sure thing.
Hey, where can I get a drink of water?
Right inside the door there. Help yourself.
Thanks. And, say, you might clean the windshield while you're at it.
Sure thing.
You want a drink too, Hank?
Yeah, I think I do.
All right, come on. All right, Hank. Do your stuff.
Okay, he's cleaning the inside of the windshield now. It'll be easy. Get in that car. Oh, come on, fast.
Okay, I will.
Go and get in there.
All set, Bill. Hurry up.
No, all right. Take it easy. Ah, fine business. Only $10. Oh, well, it's better than nothing.
Where are you taking me?
For a nice little ride, mister.
You mean you're going to kill me?
I don't know just yet. We'll see. Now, shut up.
And 40 minutes later, the terrified gas station attendant is hauled roughly out of the car near Lincoln and Manchester Avenues and dragged into a vacant lot. There, the two bandits tie him securely with bailing wire, then make a laughing departure in their car. 1 hour later, at a small service station on North Vermont, the youthful pair strike again, kidnap the attendant, take him 35 miles out of the city and leave him tied to a tractor near Huntington Beach. And early the next morning at the Georgia Street police station, an unshaven, disheveled individual faces the desk sergeant with a strange story.
I tell you, I was kidnapped right out of my own service station and dragged clear down to Huntington Beach. That's where they left me.
How'd you get here?
Guy on the highway heard me yelling, gave me a lift into town. He's outside right now.
You got a description of the men, license number of the car?
Oh, I remember what the fellas looked like, all right. As far as the license numbers are concerned, I didn't have time to even see them.
That's too bad. However, give me as good a description of the men as you can. We'll see what we can do.
Well, they was both pretty young. Not over 20, I'd say. One of them had a nose that had been flattened by something. Kind of blonde hair, heavy set. It was plenty tough. Seemed to be the leader.
heavy set. The other one, swarthy complexion, black hair, both under 20.
That all we got to go on?
That's right. If we don't bring these boys in before too long, you know what'll happen.
Yeah, I think I do all right. We'll get a ribbing from the paper.
Yeah, and from everybody else, too. Sometimes I wish I'd been born a crooner or something instead of a policeman.
Well, too late now to do anything about it.
Huh?
You're being a crooner, I mean. What we've got to do is find these boys.
Right, and soon. I've got a statement here that the bandit's car was a black sedan, a Chevrolet. With all the black Chevrolets around this town, it'll be a simple matter to find the one we want. Just pick it right out of the air or something.
Sure, right out of the air. Well, come on, let's get that dope to the papers and get moving. I can't sit here any longer.
So the first moves are made to apprehend the two youthful desperados. Word is flashed by teletype to all local substations to be on the lookout for a black sedan answering the meager description supplied by the victim. A description of the two boys is given to every cruising police car in Los Angeles. But the rest of that day and night goes by and no word is received. No reports of gas station robberies come into headquarters. The bandit car and its occupants seem to have disappeared into thin air. Then, 7 p.m., October 5th, on Main Street in Los Angeles.
Come on, Hank. This car will do.
Okay.
Hey, what's going on here?
Shut your mouth and move over.
But
shut up, or would you rather get a dose of this?
A gun?
Yeah, and it's ready to go off any second.
Well, don't shoot. I'll move over. Here.
Yeah, that's better. I'll drive. Pile in the back, Hank. We're off. Now, listen, careful, mister. We ain't made no definite plans about you yet. That sort of depends on how you act. But I'll tell you one thing. If you start any monkey business, you'll get a dose of lead slugs that won't feel too good. Now, how's about it?
I won't try anything, honest. I won't say a thing.
Oh, that's smart. Maybe you'll get along all right at that.
The swell bus you got here. Huh, Bill?
Yeah, brand new. We can really go places in it.
Yeah, huh? I wonder how fast it'll do.
Oh, please, it's not even broken in yet. Don't try to go too fast, will you?
I thought you said you was going to keep that top shut. What would you like? Your car burnt up a bit or your stomach filled with lead slugs?
I'm sorry. I only thought that maybe you wouldn't ruin the car. I won't say any more.
Good. Because if you do, I know how to stop you. Now, listen, mister. This is one time when it's up to you what happens. When we drive into this gas station here, keep real quiet. Or else. You understand?
Yes, I understand.
Okay. See that you remember it. Get organized, Hank. We're going in here.
All set, Bill.
Evening. Fill her up?
Yeah. With yourself. Get in here and make it fast.
See.
Feel that? Now, come on in back here.
Oh, okay, only keep that gun on.
Go ahead, Bill. I'll keep our friends busy cleaning the windows till you get back.
Okay. Not bad. Not bad at all. All right, Hank. I got all there was. You better stay back there with this guy until we get rid of him.
Right. Let's get going.
Out towards the beach, the daring bandits drive their captive. Along the leader. Out through the crowded of Beverly Hills section. Through heavy traffic. Then to Westwood. Finally, on a side road, they drag the gas station attendant out of the car and tie him to a ladder lying in a vacant lot. Then the three occupants of the car continue their wild flight. At breakneck speed, the pug-nosed individual hurls the car over the roads, out of Los Angeles to Bakersfield, where they stop long enough to rob another gas station and kidnap the owner and his wife. Then back on the highway again, and north to Fresno. In Fresno, they stop at a gas station, but give up the plan at the last minute, continue on to Modesto, where suddenly, in a lonely, uninhabited section, the driver pulls the car to an abrupt stop.
All right, you two get out here.
You're not going to leave us here with my wife only out of the hospital 3 days.
I'm going to leave you here, and if you make another crack, I'll leave you laying flat.
How about me? You want me to stay here, too?
There you go, getting curious again. Now, you stay with us. I got other plans for you. Come on, Hank. Help me tie these two up.
Okay, Bill, I'm right with you.
You realize that this might kill my wife, don't you?
I ain't interested in what this might or might not do. You're lucky to get off this easy if you only had sense enough to know it.
The girl's all tied up, Bill.
God, so's this guy. Now let's get moving.
I hope they catch you two devils. Then I hope to get a chance to get my hands on you before they hang you.
If I thought there was any chance of that, I'd fill you so full of slugs right now that you wouldn't be able to even talk. But don't worry. They ain't gonna catch us. Cause we got it all figured out. They ain't got a chance in the world.
All right, talk while you can, but they'll get you.
Ah, hogwash. Come on, Hank. This guy's beginning to bore me.
back to the highway and on with the seemingly never-ending tour. And a few hours later, they speed through Stockton, watch the lights of the city as they fade in the distance.
We're through now, Bill.
I think it's about time we get rid of this guy. He's getting on my nerves.
That suits me. I'd like to be able to relax for a while myself.
And there ought to be a good place along here somewhere.
What are you going to do with me?
That all depends. I ain't make up my mind yet.
If I was running things, I'd say get rid of him for good.
Well, you ain't running things.
I'm glad of that.
Maybe you won't be before today's over.
You haven't got anything to gain by killing me.
I don't know about that. You know a lot too much about us. You might spill it to the law.
That's why I say get rid of him once and for all.
All right. Let's not babe about it. We gotta find a place first anyway. Here's a swell spot. Just a place. Here we are. Pile out.
Okay.
You know, I can't quite figure it out. It don't seem good to let you loose now. But I don't want no mess on my hands.
You mean a mess on your hands? I thought you said we'd never get caught.
They won't. Only if something did happen to slip up, we don't want no murder rap.
Say, what's got into you, Bill? You sound as though you were getting soft or something.
Well, maybe I am. Only I don't feel right about this.
You're right about that murder business, kid. You're only making it tougher for yourself by killing me.
Did anyone ask you for an opinion?
No, only I thought maybe...
Don't think. When you stop blabbing, I'm going to let you have it.
Okay. Well, how about it, Bill?
Nuts. We'll leave him here. Tie him to a tree or something.
But that way he can squawk.
You heard what I said. We're leaving him here.
Okay, Bill, you're the boy.
That's right. Only sometimes you don't seem to remember it.
I'm sorry, Bill. I didn't mean to shoot off my face.
Okay. Come on, let's tie this guy down. I'm getting nervous standing around beefing about it.
So Kenneth Milster, the unfortunate companion of the two bandits, finds himself tied to a tree miles from anywhere, but with his life still intact. 4 hours after the bandits have left, he squirms, twists, frantically tries to undo the wire that holds him prisoner. And at last, he manages to free himself. Running to the road, he hails an early morning milk truck and gets a ride to Stockton, where he gives an account of the long vigil to Chief of Police F.H. Fredericks. And in turn, with the license numbers of Milster's car in his possession, Chief Fredericks teletypes the Los Angeles authorities.
Los Angeles Police, attention robbery detail. Have here in Stockton one Kenneth Milster, kidnapped with his car from your city October 5th by two armed bandits. Released this day near here by same. Took car with them. Description as follows. Pontiac sedan, 1935. License number 9X6592. Two men. One, blonde, pug-nosed, heavy set. Believed to be about 20 years of age. Number two, light build, dark complexion, dark hair, both armed. Request your office send statewide bulletins asking assistance. Fredericks, Chief of Police, Stockton, California.
And in response, the Los Angeles authorities reply...
Stockton Police, attention Chief Fredericks. Sending statewide bulletin to all points immediately. Please hold Milster for us until we come for him. These two men thought to be same as two men wanted here for gas station burglaries and kidnapping. Seeger, Los Angeles Police.
Seeger, Los Angeles Police Department. Pontiac sedan, license number 9X6592, recovered here. Occupants missing. Holding Milster per your request. Frederick, Stockton Police.
So the first good description of the missing car proved to be a little use to the police. But with the wheels of the law in full motion, Detectives Maxwell and Anderson slowly tighten the net of evidence against the time when the two bandits will be apprehended. In the office of the robbery detail, the three Los Angeles victims are shown several mug pictures of youthful criminals, but fail to point out the wanted ones. Then, at 11 o'clock that night, October 7th, a message flashes across the teletype network to the Los Angeles police.
Los Angeles Police Department. Regarding your bulletin, regarding wanted men. Hurt man of this city, kidnapped here, 9:30 p.m. by three armed men. Forced to drive them to outskirts of town. Thrown out of car. All wore dark suit, gray hat. Description of car as follows. Auburn, 1932, Brome. Brown body, tan cloth top. License number 9F4000. Headed south on Highway 99. Sheriff C.M. Hogan, Modesto Sheriff's Office.
Highway 99. Well, that means we can expect them back here in Los Angeles.
if they don't change their mind.
Right, and we'd better get word to all the boys to be on the lookout for that car. Our best chance is to get them before they have a chance to change cars again.
Come on, let's get this on the broadcast.
Los Angeles police calling all cars, attention all cars. Be on the lookout for 1932 Auburn Brougham. Tan cloth top. License number 9 Frank 4000. Driven by 3 men. These men are wanted on robbery and kidnap charges. All 3 are armed, so be careful. That's all. Rosenquist.
But almost before this broadcast is received by the various radio cars, a report comes in from a gas station operator on North Broadway.
Yes, sir. They took all my money and made me get in the car with them.
What kind of a car?
It was a 1934 Ford sedan. I got the license when they left me.
Good. What was it?
2L7782.
All right, Mr. Smoyer. Thanks a lot. Harry, cancel that last broadcast and send this one out, will you? Our boys have changed cars again.
And early that same morning, Chief of Detectives Joe Taylor calls Captain Seeger into his office. Gives new instructions. Accordingly, Captain Seeger assigns an officer to every strategic gas station in the Los Angeles city limits. Then turns the office over to Acting Captain E.J. Rivas. And in a radio car down in the Main Street beer joint district, Lieutenant Anderson sits with one of his undercover men, waiting the return of his partner in Milster, when the radio suddenly comes to life.
Calling car 15314. Attention, Maxwell and Anderson. Call your station at once. Car 15314. Call your station at once.
Listen, Ed, I've got a call in, and I don't know where Maxwell and Milster are. You beat it into every joint in this block until you find them. Tell them to be on the corner of 3rd and Main in 15 minutes. I'll meet them there, okay?
Okay.
Thanks, and don't let me down. This might be important.
A hasty call informs Anderson that there's an important bit of information waiting for him at the robbery squad office. So, after picking up his companions, he proceeds there at once.
Here you are, Lieutenant. Teletype from Stockton that just came in for you.
Thanks. Two original men, members of gang you're looking for, thought to be William S. Parker and Harold Lacey, both deserters from San Diego Naval Training Station. Parker's home, this city. Lacey from Fresno. Parker served term in Whittier Reform School, believed to have girlfriend living in Los Angeles. Her name, Mary Jennings. Address 2135 West Kingston Road, Frederick, Stockton Police. So that's the attraction in Southern California, that girl.
Think we ought to go out there now?
No, first I want to go out to Whittier and see if we can't get a picture of Parker. Come on, Mr. Milster, I'm afraid I'll have to ask you to take another ride with us. I need your identification.
That's perfectly all right with me. I don't mind riding around with you fellas, just as long as I don't have to go with those bandits anymore.
And at the Whittier Reform School, Milster points to the picture of Parker and positively identifies him as the pug-nosed leader of the gang. With this in their possession, Maxwell and Anderson head back to Los Angeles. Stop at the office long enough to report their actions. And there, Pat Shepard, veteran newspaper reporter, insists on joining them. His newspaper man's intuition sensing a good story. So, a few minutes later, Anderson, Maxwell, Milster, and Shepard arrive at the address of Parker's girlfriend. Maxwell and Shepard quietly cross the yard to keep watch on the rear of the house, while Anderson, after telling Milster to stay in the car and make himself as inconspicuous as possible, walks to the front door, rings the bell.
Yes?
I'm looking for a Mary Jennings. She live here?
Yes, I'm her father. What was it about?
Well, I understand she has a friend named Parker, Bill Parker. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. He was here tonight.
He was? Mr. Jennings, may I come in for an instance? This is vitally important. I'm Lieutenant Anderson. Here are my credentials.
An officer? Come in, right in here.
Thank you.
We can talk in here, I think. What's this all about?
Mr. Jennings, I am sorry to have to be so blunt about it, but this friend of your daughter's, this Parker, is wanted up and down the line for robbery and kidnapping.
What?
That's the truth. He's a desperate man. Obviously, you can see the reason for my visit.
Yes, of course. Bill Parker, a robber, a kidnapper. Why, that seems impossible.
You know where Parker is, Mr. Jennings?
Well, I can try to show you. If you wait till I dress.
Of course. And I needn't tell you, I suppose, that time is very important.
Well, I'll hurry just as fast as I can. Won't be a minute, if you'll excuse me.
I'll wait on the front porch. You join me there as soon as you're ready.
All right, Lieutenant. I'll only be a moment.
Bill. Bill. There's someone sitting in the car in the garage back there. Pat and I heard him talking.
You sure?
Positive.
Okay, come on. Might be Parker.
You and Pat cover me. I'll see who it is.
Okay.
Stand up. I'm going to call.
Yeah, all right. We're all set.
Come out of there. I'll blow your head off. Come on, with your hands up. I'm not wasting any more time.
All right.
Look, it's Parker, all right. Fits his picture perfectly.
Yeah, and his girl's with him.
Well, slap the cuff on these two, Harry.
Okay.
Oh, you too, Mr. Jennings. I thought you were upstairs dressing.
Well, you see, as a matter of fact...
All right, I understand. Harry, slap some bracelets on this fellow, too. I'm not taking any chances
sure
now.
Thing. Come on. Stick out your hand.
Parker, where's your pals?
That's for you to find out.
How about you, young lady? You know where they are?
I don't even know who you're talking about.
Oh, you don't? You never heard of Harold Lacey?
No. I know a friend of Bill's, but I don't see what this is all about anyway.
Surprise you if I told you that Bill here is the leader of a 3-man gang that's wanted for kidnapping, robbery, and plenty of things, eh?
I don't believe it.
Okay, it's the truth, though. All right, Harry, round them up. We'll take them all in.
What are you taking Mary for? She don't know nothing.
I'm not so sure of that, Parker. I think she knows plenty. Anyway, she goes to jail.
But she don't know a thing, I tell you.
All right, Bill, there's plenty of time to do your shouting. Right now, you and Mary and I are going for a little ride to the station. That is, if you don't want to tell me where Lacey is.
If I tell you where he is, will you let Mary go?
I think I can say yes to that.
All right. Let her go. I'll show you.
I thought you would. Come on, Harry. We're going to pick up the rest of the gang.
And a few minutes later, at a small rooming house on East 5th Street, Maxwell, Anderson, and Shepard stand before a door, from under which streams a crack of light.
The door's locked. We bust in. If it's open, walk in. All set?
Okay.
Yeah.
And here goes.
Hey, what the devil?
Put him up, Lacey. Hi. Nab that fellow on the bed, Harry.
Hey, what is this? I won't put up nothing for no one.
All right, then. I'll put him up for you.
What are you doing?
Hands up in your hands where I can't get loose. Right to the chair.
Hey, this guy on the bed dog like a light, Bill.
I'll put the cuffs on him, Harry. We got him and we're going to keep him.
Hey, how'd your boys know we was here?
Well, I'll tell you, son. It's just another case of a woman being the cause of everything. Yes, sir. We got the woman, and now we've got you. Think it over.
Lacey and Parker were both sentenced to San Quentin Penitentiary to serve a term up from 6 years to life. The third boy, James Lawson, was sentenced by Superior Court Judge D.M. Young of Stockton to San Quentin for the same term. Thus, once again, has been demonstrated the folly of embryonic criminals in allowing themselves to be deceived by the false glamour given by publicity to the exploits of John Dillinger and his ilk.
Thank you, Chief Davis. Every time you hear a siren, either on the air or on the street, let it remind you that Rio Grande cracked gasoline is the gasoline of police car performance, and that you can have the same brilliant results from your own car that police cars get just by patronizing your independent Rio Grande dealer. Besides featuring exactly the same Rio Grande cracked gasoline that police cars use, your independent Rio Grande dealer also offers you the finest motor oils that money can buy, Sinclair Pennsylvania and Sinclair Opaline. They are so thoroughly de-waxed, so thoroughly de-jellied, so free from impurities that they flow freely on coldest mornings. Yet no amount of engine heat can break them down. Sinclairize your motor. Your car will start quicker, run smoother, and last longer. And get the latest copy of Calling All Cars News from your Rio Grande dealer. Exclusive movie news, detective stories, thrilling features, all about the junior G-man and detective outfits for youngsters, and how you can get them absolutely free just by purchasing a few gallons of Rio Grande cracked gasoline. Get your copy tomorrow. This is your narrator, Frederick Lindsley, bidding you good night for the Rio Grande Oil Company.
That's it for Case Closed for this week. Hope you enjoyed our selections this time. You can find more old-time radio, thousands of other old-time radio episodes at relicradio.com. All the other podcasts are listed there. Find more from Calling All Cars, Dr. Morell, and a variety of other shows. Our Shoutcast stream is streaming there as well, with even more old-time radio. And if you'd like to help support it all, give that donate link a click or visit donate.relicradio.com. You can help out. It's greatly appreciated. It's how all this is made possible. Thanks to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Be back next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.